Hi, and welcome back to Why Running, a podcast where we share stories, tips, and advice to inspire and motivate you on your running journey. I'm your host, Serena Mihela, and today I'm joined by Dr. Emily Jeffens, triathlete, nutritionist, and former lecturer in nutrition. Having struggled on and off with depression since she was 14, Emily has found that training for and taking part in triathlons over the past 7 years has transformed the way she manages her mental health. She's now passionate about getting more women into sport and raising awareness of mental health and eating disorders. Emily, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, yes, welcome. Thanks for having me.
I remember coming across your story for the first time about 2 years ago in a women's running magazine. And at the time, I wasn't into running that much, but it was so wonderful to read about the impact that exercise had on your well-being. I know your dad was a huge source of inspiration for you at the time. Could you tell us a little bit more about how you got into sport and how you decided to sign up for your first triathlon?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I actually kind of grew up in quite a sporty family anyway. So I grew up swimming, did lots of swimming. So a lot of anyone else who swam growing up knows about all the early starts you used to have to do. And then I kind of quit at age 15, 16, which is quite typical in female sports at that age. Like there's a big drop off and something that's definitely working on. But so dropped off, went to university, did everything like that, studied. But when I was a teen and in my early 20s, I did really struggle with my mental health. I'm very lucky that I don't struggle anymore. But yeah, struggled with depression at that age and kind of, I don't think I had the right support at that time to help me get through it. But anyway, after finishing university, and I decided to move back home. So I was doing I'd done my master's degree, and I was doing a PhD at the time, but I decided to start commuting into university instead. And so I moved, and I realized I didn't know anyone anymore. Everyone had kind of moved on. I was like, okay, there is no one here anymore. And so I needed to meet people. So I started looking at sport again, as I was kind of surrounded by people who did sport anyway. So I just mentioned my dad. He had done an Ironman in 2016. And at the time, I remember thinking this was absolutely insane. I couldn't think of anything more like mental to do. Didn't even really understand fully what he'd done at that point. But my ex-partner at the time as well had also just signed up to his first triathlon, and happened to be my PhD supervisor that also did triathlon. And my granddad, who's now 85, is still an avid cyclist. So I was kind of just surrounded by it. And I thought, you know what, I'll sign up to my first one, because I could definitely swim because I'd done that all my life. And, you know, I'm sure I could ride a bike, and I'm sure I can figure out running, you know, one step in front of the other. And making that choice and that decision kind of really helped align like this new sense of purpose is the wrong word, but just give me more structure. So obviously I'd just moved to an area that, although I knew it, I didn't know anyone there anymore. And doing a doctorate is very stressful, and doing a PhD is really hard. And so I suddenly had this like way of managing all of that. And I think it really helped me not only get over previous mental health issues that I'd struggled with, but also became a bit of like my self-care and my way of looking after myself, and a way healthier way of managing my emotions than previous things that I'd done. So yeah, and that was, what year was that now that I did my first triathlon? I can't actually remember what year it was. I think I was like 22-ish, because it was just after my master's degree. So I think I was 22, 23, and I'm now 29, going on 30 next year. So yeah, quite a while ago. And since then, it just kind of took off. I've done everything from sprints to full Ironmans, and well, only the one full Ironman for now myself. I had a little bit of time off to have a little girl, so I've had a baby now as well, and now continuing my fitness journey, returning back to both triathlon, running, and a bit of everything. I do a lot of strength training nowadays as well, but I definitely say that shift from like 22, 23 onwards, having sport in my life just gave me this new passion and just really saved my mental health, and the fact that I had like a coping strategy, and my just well-being is so much better in general. And I'm so glad I returned to sport at a later date.
How was that first triathlon for you, and what did you love about it so much?
Oh, how what to be honest, I just had a really good time. And so I did it with my dad. We both signed up for the same one. It was a little local sprint. It was pool based because I was really scared of open water at the time. That's a whole other story. So I did not want to go in a lake or the sea. But yeah, that little sprint one was, it was just lovely to be with like family and to do it alongside my dad, which he now doesn't like the fact that I beat him now. He used to beat me, but I beat him now. I've definitely caught up with him. And it was, I don't know, it was just that experience. And then I did another one the same year. But I made the mistake of not training for the second one very much. And that really came back to bite me on the day. And then so after that second race, I like vowed, I was like, okay, if I'm going to do another triathlon, and actually I do remember, yes, that was 2017. So in 2018, I was like, if I want to do this, I need to actually train and commit to this properly. And I did. And yeah, that's, I've kind of not looked back from not training for that one that made me feel like hell on the day.
I know you had quite a difficult relationship with running, I think. Was it because you mainly enjoy cycling and swimming and you kind of injuring yourself a lot at the beginning? How did you go from that place to a place where you started improving your performance and actually enjoying running?
So I think the first 2 years where I started trying to run, I really struggled with constant injury. It was a mixture of reasons, but I think part of it was just because I wasn't really used to impact because I'd grown up swimming. So I think my bones and my joints were just so accustomed to obviously like non-weight bearing sports. It took a long time to adapt and actually build that strength. I probably didn't do enough strength training back then as well. And obviously I value that a lot more now. And yeah, so the first 2 years, lots of shin splints, lots of other injuries like that, lots of time not running and then running again and then not running. But eventually I do think my body just learned to adapt. I also got like better running shoes, for example, and I learned that I'm a massive overpronator, like hugely. I'm so flat footed. So I needed to make sure I had the right insoles in my shoes to make sure that I could actually run and not get injured for a period of time. And there has been one or two injuries that have come like and got me over the years. Like obviously everyone has one of my worst was a hip injury that I got, but other than that, touch wood, at the moment I've been injury free for a while, but let's not jinx that.
I feel like we can't talk about triathlons without talking about your most recent one, which was just a few weeks ago, and it was actually your first long distance one after becoming a mum. How did it feel compared to your previous ones?
So for a timeline, so I did my first full Ironman in 2022 and I'd done a half Ironman that year as well. And so everything was all about long distance triathlon. It was everything like that we loved, my partner as well. He'd done Kona that year. So we'd been to Hawaii, gone to the Ironman World Champs, like everything in our life was all about long distance triathlon to us. We both trained together. We did our long rides together. It was really lovely. And then out of nowhere, we had an unexpected pregnancy, which was an amazingly happy time for us as well. But it was unplanned, but one of the best things that's happened to us. And so obviously things took a bit of a pause then in the triathlon world. And my other half actually has a heart issue as well now. So it really, we had to take a complete step back from the sport. And then after having my little one, I didn't have the best end to my pregnancy. So I was actually in hospital for 6 weeks with some complications, which was a shame. And it really did like slow me down in every way. So I'd kind of been exercising throughout my pregnancy. I'd been doing lots of strength training. I was using my turbo trainer on the bike. I didn't run because I actually had the time off running because that hip injury I mentioned was around that time. And my very sensible brain kind of said to myself, well, if I've got a hip injury post Ironman and I'm now pregnant and my hips are going to be changing shape, I probably should just let that rest. So very sensibly of me, I actually didn't run. And I just focused on the turbo and strength training instead and a bit of swimming. But yeah, at the end, I had a really hard end to my pregnancy. And yeah, I just spent a lot of time in hospital. My little girl was born 5 weeks early. So she was in the NICU for a while as well. And because I had a C-section, there was a longer recovery And I actually paid privately in the end to see like a specialist woman's physio instead of going through the NHS checks, because for me wanting to return to sport, I didn't need them to just say, yeah, you're good to go. I needed them to say, right, can I start running now? Can I start like training properly? Obviously, I'd had a massive surgery, and this was last summer. And I did somehow manage to get myself to do a little sprint triathlon just before the season ended, and waddled my way around with my little girl at the finish line. I think she was only like 3 or 4 months old, so I'd done well to even get to that point by then. But it was more just the enjoyment of getting back to it. But the goal was always to return to longer distance triathlon. So that was how I spent all of the winter and this year kind of training myself back up to this level. I did like a half marathon in March that went really well. And I've actually got a PB, which was really unexpected. Obviously, having so, as I said, like the whole of my pregnancy, I didn't run at all. Then I'd had like this slow return after my C-section. So 6 months of running and I ran a PB, which was mad. So that was really good. That was at Heaton Park half marathon, if anyone's from the like Manchester way up here anyway. So that was really good. And then I started getting ill, which was a bit of a shame. And so I actually signed up to 3 half Ironmans this year. And only got to do one of them because of illness and various other things. So I was meant to do Outlaw Half and I had a chest infection. And then I was meant to do Bolton Half Ironman with my other half, but his heart problem unfortunately meant neither of us could race. So it was like, right, one more try. And so I signed up to Weymouth, which was a September race, which is not really something I'd like to do because of the British weather, obviously getting a lot colder. But I was like, come on, I've done all this training. There's got to be one race that I can fit in. And the stars aligned. We managed to get there. I got to the start line and I had the best day ever. It was really cold, don't get me wrong. But if you look at any of the pictures and videos, I've just got the biggest smile on my face. It just meant the world that I finally like got back to that point, and I was like, I can't believe I'm doing a half Ironman. Like, just felt so grateful to be there, because I think you've just got to appreciate that not everyone can have the chance due to either health reasons or whatever. So I don't know. I think my perspectives have just changed, and I'm now just more grateful than ever. It's not really about the speed anymore, and it's more just getting to go and take part and be there. And obviously, if I do well, it's a bonus. But it's not the end goal anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's incredible, especially because you started from such a young age, 22, 23. That's not kind of the typical thing that you would do at that age. And then just continuing with training and with the triathlons, and then still training during your pregnancy, and now getting back into training after birth. I think it's just so empowering, and it's actually so nice that you're sharing your journey on social media because you're inspiring so many other
Thank
women out there. So yeah, and I know you're super passionate about destigmatizing conversations around mental health and well-being and normalizing these conversations. So you talked about your struggles during your pregnancy, and also your struggles earlier as a teenager. How has sport impacted your mental health, and what are some of the lessons that you've learned on this journey?
I don't really know how to answer that really, because it was more of a just like a one journey. There wasn't like one key moment or anything. It just provided more like structure and more of a structure and a better way of dealing with things emotionally, and actually understanding that I can process thoughts a lot better. I would go out and run with friends and talk to them when I was struggling with things. But in general, like my whole life has just changed in that period as well. Like I definitely, a lot of the problems that I kind of struggled with when I was younger, also aren't in my life anymore anyway. So I don't know. I think I was just, I took control of a lot more factors in my life. Gained a lot more confidence. I made big changes in my life to accommodate the things that I wanted. I'm quite career driven as well, so that was a big thing that I wanted to pursue. Sport just helped me along that journey, in like finding myself and working out what I needed. And I feel like I'm quite lucky now that I haven't had any mental health issues in quite a long time now, like probably a good 5 or 6 years, possibly. I think finishing my PhD was obviously a big part of that as well, because it's a huge stress. If anyone listening has done a doctorate, they will understand how hard it is. So I think since then, I've been really lucky that I've definitely just I kind of prioritize what I need, and I'm very open and honest with both my partner and my friends and family, and that's really helped.
I think today many of us are struggling with anxious thoughts and overthinking and self-doubt, especially on social media. From your experience, what would you say to someone who might be looking on Instagram at these amazing athletes and think, I'll never be able to be like them or I'll never be able to get there?
Well, you don't need to be like them. That's the answer, really. You don't need to be like anyone else but yourself. So if you want to do sport, do it for yourself. Don't do it because someone else is. Don't run because you saw someone else running. Do it because you want to do it. And there's no point comparing yourself to other people and times and finishing places. Like, comparison is the thief of joy. That's the good old phrase, isn't it? And we shouldn't really do that. So although social media is great for motivation and also inspiration, you need to just make sure that it's also not you. You're looking at someone else. So you don't need to try to be anyone else.
And I think that that's so important because it also makes you look at your own progress. Because when you start comparing yourself to other people, that's when you kind of forget where you started from, and kind of you don't look at your experiences. You're a unique experience. You just start comparing, and you feel like you're not doing enough, or that you're not enough, or not achieving enough. And naturally, you start feeling bad about yourself and your performance overall.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no point looking at numbers of other people and stuff. And if you struggle with that and you know that that's going to be a trigger, then just try to avoid things like Strava and apps like that. Obviously, they can be great for motivation and connecting with people. But if you struggle with comparison, just be cautious and, look after yourself and put yourself first.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on nutrition as well, since this is your area of expertise and you've got so much experience in this space. I would like to ask you about underfueling. I know you talk about underfueling a lot on your page. What impact does underfueling have on our performance?
So it's important to not just think about performance, but also our health in general. So underfueling can impact, yes, your performance, but physiologically and your mental health as well are all going to be impacted by a lack of nutrition. Being in at the end of the day, if you're in a malnourished state and you're not getting all the minerals, vitamins, the macronutrients you need, it affects essentially every single system in your body. So all the way from your cardiovascular system to your immune system, it can all be impacted. I always like to think of it as, so say your body was in like fight or flight mode and you needed to run away from a bear. Okay, this is a really ridiculous example, but say you were going to run away from a bear, your body is going to use any energy it's got to run. It's not going to spend time going, you know what, I'm going to use some energy on digesting food or working on my reproductive system right now. So what your body actually does is it uses energy for exercise, because that's what you're doing right now, when in reality you can be taking energy away from those like really essential bodily functions that we need to be fueling as well. So underfueling will affect, yeah, health, not just performance, but your performance will be affected too. Underfueling can lead to more injuries. It can lead to general like not enjoying the sport as much as well, because it'll feel like more of a struggle. It's not to say you always have to fuel completely optimally. Obviously, there are circumstances where you might not be able to, and that's okay. But prioritizing fueling your body the best you can the most of the time will help you get more out of your running and your sport and performance, and also just the enjoyment as well.
Can you be underfueling without actually realizing? Are there any signs that people should look at? Can you not eat enough maybe and not realize it almost, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so the most common signs of like underfueling are chronic injuries that keep returning. So if you're getting injured quite a lot, sometimes mood as well. So like if you're lowering mood quite a lot, in females in particular, missing menstrual cycles or having an irregular cycle. I think it's if there's been like three missed cycles in a row, that can be a sign of underfueling and what we call relative energy deficiency in sports. There are a few different things to look at, but it's also just learning what's normal for you. And if you're concerned that you might be underfueling, I would reach out to a registered nutritionist or dietitian that specializes in sports performance and kind of discuss your concerns with them. I think, and also following the right people on social media is big when it comes to nutrition as well. Make sure anyone that you are following, because there's so much misinformation, is actually qualified to be providing nutritional information, because that will help you educate yourself on how to make sure you're fueling correctly.
That was actually my next question. I think there's so much conflicting information on social media. It's so
Yes.
hard to distinguish between misinformation from science. What advice would you give to someone navigating the world of nutrition online, and how could they know that someone is maybe registered or specialized in nutrition so that they know that they have actually good advice?
So it's looking out for qualifications. A lot of nutritionists will actually state that if they're like registered, but if you're in the UK, for example, there's something called the Association of Nutrition, which is like a register that nutritionists can list themselves on, which then has like it has their own ethics situation. It has lots of policies that we have to adhere to, and you also have to have a certain amount of qualifications to be registered. So that's a good place to check if someone is registered, and they might put in brackets something called like R Nutri after like their name, so like RNUTR, or they might be AUTR, which means they're associates. They might have just graduated, but they're still on the register, so they're like on their way to becoming a fully registered nutritionist. They might also have RD next to their name, which means registered dietitian as well. So that's also something to look for. And the BDA, so the British Dietetic Association, I think they also have like a list that you can access of registered dietitians. So it's looking for things like that. As unfortunately, dietitian is a protected title in the UK, so you can't call yourself a dietitian if you're not a registered dietitian. But unfortunately, at the moment, nutritionist isn't a protected term. So a lot of people can actually call themselves a nutritionist when they don't actually have the qualifications to, or they might perceive themselves to. So at the moment, it is a voluntary register, the Association of Nutrition, but I would definitely advise having a look at that. The BDA also has a specialist section called like the sports nutrition version, which is called SENR, which SENR, and that register is like sports nutrition professionals that are either dietitians or nutritionists as well. So there are a few different places to look, but they're the kind of things to look out for on usually on, I'm thinking about Instagram in particular, but on like bios, people might put like either registered nutritionist with the terminology or RD, or they might have SENR next to their name as well. They might actually have degrees as well listed as well. Like I have PhD in my title, as my PhD is part of my qualifications, and my PhD was in nutrition and metabolism. And so little things like that are good to have a look for.
Yeah, I think that's super useful. And also something else would be just to see what works best for you, really, because I think sometimes we can follow people blindly and just look at someone and kind of ditch what we're doing just because someone else on social media said that we should be doing it otherwise. And I think we should look more closely at what works for us, right? Like, would you think that that's a big thing?
100%. There's definitely no one size fits all approach when it comes to nutrition. And it's just if you have any questions, or say you've read a headline, because the media is notorious for misleading headlines when it comes to nutrition, is actually just reaching out to someone who's qualified, and I'm sure someone will help you if you're unsure on anything, or say you've read something that's completely the opposite of something you read the week before, just reach out to
Exactly.
someone. I'm sure they'd be happy to help.
And speaking of headlines, I think something that we've seen a lot in headlines recently is ultra processed foods. And I know you did multiple posts on ultra processed foods on your page recently. I think in the running community, we see a lot of sports supplements and energy gels and that kind of stuff. And I think one of your posts was actually talked about ultra processed foods and energy gels as well. Are these products healthy? Would you recommend them? And kind of what's your take on them? And do you think there are classes ultra processed foods? And if they are, should we consume less of them?
So the thing is with sports nutrition products is they're actually designed specifically to provide the energy that we need. So they are science backed and been used with runners or triathletes or whichever kind of population you're looking at in particular. But most of them are actually evidence based, and The problem is, so with whole foods, there are some that are really good for during exercise, but especially if you're trying to get to the higher amounts of, so say you're trying to get 60 grams of carbohydrates an hour or more, that's, it can get quite hard to achieve from whole food approaches. It can become more difficult. So actually using sports nutrition products alongside these can be really beneficial. I hate the thought of people seeing them as unhealthy, and what I see it as, aim for an 80-20 approach to your diet. So 80% of the time you should be aiming for a nutritious, mostly from whole food diet where you can, and the other 20% of the time can be foods that are a bit more of your choice, because food is also about balance. We all have lives where food is also culture, food is celebration. Like sometimes that is going to involve some ultra processed foods, and I think that's okay to an extent, as long as it's not the big majority of your diet. And I think sports nutrition supplements also fall into this. Again, so energy gels, they're quite convenient for running, let's be honest. They're a lot easier than chewing on like a bag of potatoes or carbohydrate, you know, thinking about the actual ease and practicality. And that's again something to consider, that all of these products are designed for sports specifically, for the size of them. They're easier to fit in your pockets. Obviously we're focusing on gels here specifically, but even like energy powders that go into bottles, if you're using energy chews, it's all designed specific for sports. So although yes, most of them are, I'm pretty sure all of them will be ultra processed in some way, there are some brands in particular that going to be more natural than others, and obviously you can use them too. But it's finding what works for you, because although they might be a more natural product, it might actually not work for you in the same way that other ones do. So it's definitely trial and error and working out the best solution, the best mix of supplements and also whole foods. I know some food options that can be quite good for running are like those little Saurine malt loaf, Munchbox loaves. They're quite small, people like those. Obviously sweets and jelly babies are also quite helpful, but they're bananas. But again, sports nutrition supplements are more designed to be able to have on the go and a bit, some for some people, easier on the stomach.
Yeah, and I think what I liked about what you said on social media a few weeks ago was this idea of maybe classifying ultra processed foods. I think this would be a lot more useful, that rather than just putting everything into the same category, because we can't think of, fast food is ultra processed food, but also like a certain type of bread is ultra processed food. When certainly
Exactly,
there's like
like white
huge
bread.
differences.
Yeah, there's huge differences. There's so many processed and ultra processed foods that aren't typically what you think is unhealthy. Like yogurts as well. They're technically ultra processed foods, a lot of them, and like white bread, for example. But we're not looking at like fast food. So I think if there could be different classifications in the future, that would be helpful. But whether that'll ever happen, I'm not sure. So it's more about just educating yourself and learning that you don't have to cut all of these things out of your diet. It's just having moderation. And as I said, I think the 80-20 approach is a great way to think about your diet.
I know it's October and we're close to the end of this year, but have you got any goals for 2025? Any running goals, or have you signed up for any races?
I have a few ideas in mind, but I'm not set in stone. There's a half Ironman on my 30th birthday weekend, so I'm very tempted by that. But there's also a few marathons on that weekend, so I'm like, do I go for a marathon or do I go for a half Ironman? I do want to do a standalone marathon because I've never actually done one. I've only ever done one in an Ironman, so that's a goal for the next year. I just don't know. It's working out the correct order of how I want to do things. And other than that, at the moment, they're the only things that I'm playing around with. I think I'll probably plan up to like June and then see for the rest of the year.
I think it's going to feel quite easy for you since you've done it as part of a
Oh no, I
triathlon.
don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think a marathon's ever going to feel easy.
Yeah, I mean easier compared to, having to do the cycling and swimming bit as well, but yeah, I just keep us updated, and I look forward to seeing your content closer to the marathon time. My final question for this podcast is, why do you run, and what do you love about running? I know for you it's more about endurance sports in general, but if you could think of running specifically, what do you love about running, and why do you love it?
I love running and just having a bit of free time. So as a mom and who works full time, busy career, I'm always on the go. Like I don't really stop, but when I run, I actually just it's a bit of like me time. So I stick on a podcast and I'm not distracted by my phone constantly, and I can actually just enjoy being outside by myself and have a bit of fresh air. And so I love running for that reason. I used to hate running because of the constant injury, so it did take a long time for me to actually enjoy it. But now it's I just enjoy having that like space to think, and sometimes I do my best thought processing on runs as well. I actually have had to stop on a few of my runs to write down ideas I've had for like work related stuff or like for social content and stuff. I'm like, oh, I want to post about that, or I'm really passionate about this, and I'm really passionate about people accessing the right nutritional information for them to actually meet their own goals. And yeah, so I think running for me, it's just that free time that I don't get at other points in the day. And yeah, I love a podcast when I run. I love listening to podcasts. It's one of my favorite things.
I love that, and I think it just going for a run gives you so much clarity, so much mental health, mental clarity. And yeah, I totally agree with you. And I've had some of the best ideas on a run, so it's incredible.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Emily, for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure to have you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
I've got a quick fire round of question just before you go, if you would like to, if you'd like to take part.
Okay, go for it.
So, what's your favorite season for running?
Probably spring or autumn, the middle seasons.
What's your favorite place to run?
Ooh. Rivers or canals, usually.
What's your favorite post-run snack?
Ooh, what is it? It's a very good question. It varies, but usually just some kind of shake because I'm usually rushing around. So a protein shake, but with carbohydrate as well. So I can actually get out the door to where I need to be next.
Have you got a particular flavor that you love?
Oh, chocolate one.
And what's your favorite song to listen to on a run? This is quite a hard one.
Oh, that is a hard one. Oh, I don't know. I have a pop running playlist, which is literally just like noughties pop songs, and it's not one particular song, but that's probably my favorite playlist
Oh,
to listen to. Yeah.
yeah, I love a pop playlist as well. Thank you so much again, Emily, for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you, and I hope we can catch up soon again.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Why Running. If you love this episode, then please leave me a review and share this podcast on your social media. And if you'd like to hear more from me, then make sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. I'll see you next time.